all my school books are full of sketches and drawings, and everyone made a bit fun of me. I was a bit the nerdy guy who lived for his design passion.
Welcome to another episode of Partners in Time. My name is Paul Ripke. I'm a photographer, podcaster, storyteller. I do a fashion label, and mainly I'm a watch lover. And that's one of the reasons why I'm the special host of this podcast. Like Christoph Granger, the CEO of IWC, is going to talk to successful and inspiring personalities about their life and about their visions. I'm going to try to talk to the people behind the brand at IWC, at the watchmaking industry. I hope we're going to discover the secret behind IWC watches and the heritage behind the brand. Let's talk to an expert now. Let's dive deeper. My name is Paul Ripke. Welcome to another episode of Partners in Time. And here we are. Christian, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So the first, I know you since 2009. We worked together. We're going to talk about this. I have a couple of questions about these great, especially about the last day, to be honest. Like we had one extra day, which we kind of used to, I would say, spa a little bit. We're going to talk about this at the end. But first, what do you do at IWC? What's your job? What's your job description? What's on your business card?
On my business card, there's written creative director, but in fact, I'm looking after all design and visual aspects of the IWC Schaffhausen brand. So we are really working 360 degrees with the product at the heart of everything we do. But we are also looking onto all other visual expressions of the brand, be it print material, advertising, photography, films, architecture, visual merchandising. So we really try to build a consistent image of the brand, and as we are IWC, we also try to reinvent ourselves every year with every new launch and create a new aesthetic universe around that launch.
That's quite interesting for me because I worked as a photographer. I'm doing this for 15 years and videographer, but to be totally fair, I've never seen any other client or customer or brand that is like this working. Normally, brands hire ad agencies and they do the creative job. Why is that different? Because the way we work together and the way we talked about it last year when we met at Formula One, you're not only designing the watches, you're also designing the story of the watches, right?
Yes, we do.
Why?
Yeah, because we believe that actually we have a good understanding of our brand. We have amazing people here in the headquarters, and there's so much creativity and so much vision, so that we believe that we can develop this vision ourselves. And for sure, here and there we need some support. We need some creative support from film directors, from photographers. Here and there also we involve agencies, but the design vision, the strategic and creative vision, still remains with us.
And could I sum up that you do storytelling as well? Because that's what, like, I'm now talking a lot about me and myself trying to tell stories. Is that what you do as a brand with the watch stories at the end?
I mean, that's probably our second passion next to watchmaking and being craftsmen at heart. We are storytellers. I mean, we have a very emotional product. The mechanical watch as such lives not only from the physical quality of the product itself and all the functional capabilities, but it also lives of the story you can tell with it. And this is stories that are related to our brand history. It's related to craftsmen. It's related also to people and famous wearers of these watches. And that's also related to people that work with us, that buy our products, that leverage our products in different ways. So this delivers basically the stories we are telling, and these stories really vary by theme, by collection, and by launch year. And this really is part of the fun and part of the excitement working for such a brand like IWC.
How long do you do that? Like, how long do you work with IWC?
Almost 13 years now. Incredible. What? Yeah, I've never expected 36. That.
So you start. how did you end up over there? Like, what's your background? You are German, right?
I'm German. I'm trained as an industrial designer. So I'm coming from the Rhine area, close to Düsseldorf and Cologne.
Okay.
And so I studied industrial design in Essen in the Ruhr area.
Okay. And that's a good university for that, right?
Yeah, it was one of the few universities with a design program back then. Everything else was on different levels. So the university in Essen had quite a long tradition in design and different design studies. So I really enjoyed that. And after that, I joined a couple of agencies in industrial design, product design, and also brand consultancy. And I worked for companies like Fork Design. Everyone knows Hartmut Esslinger and what he did. And this was an amazing time. And I worked for big teams like Philips Design in Amsterdam, working on very different products. And I sometimes say for fun, I designed almost everything except watches and cars. So I literally did furniture, industrial products, even aircraft interiors. So yeah, I really like designing things. That's my life and my passion.
How does that work? I'm like the 16-year-old Christian. When did you realize you have an interest in design?
Actually, it started much earlier. I was probably 10 or 12 that I knew that I wanted to become a designer. And I was really doing a lot of sketching at home, sketching all kinds of products, drawings, and also building stuff with my hands. And so this was really my passion and my thing. I didn't even know a designer or an architect really in the personally. Probably one of the heroes of my childhood was a guy like Luigi Colani. I mean, he was a kind of super designer. He just designed everything. I mean, that's what really amazed me. He was obviously a guy with a very different style, but his bold approach to say, okay, I'm a designer. I look at the world with different eyes, and I can contribute to make things look better and contribute to things to shape the future. And this is what I really liked.
It's super interesting. So it started very young. What did your parents do? Like, do you have a background in that? Or
no, my father was an engineer. My mother was an art teacher, a school teacher. Maybe that was quite logic also to go into this in this area for work. But in the end, they were always very skeptical about the profession as a designer. But they supported me, and in the end, many things I did with my hands, also building stuff, I learned from my father. And prior to my studies, I did a training as a carpenter. So I have a background in as a craftsman. So okay. This also what linked me with IWC and working with the watchmakers. And it's obviously a different type of work, but the passion, doing something with your hands, having attention for detail and passion for making beautiful things is the same. So in that sense, I could very much link myself with a watchmaking brand like IWC and the products we do.
Do you think kids are all designers? I mean, I'm honest with you. I probably was a designer at 9 because I drawed like planes and stuff, and then I was not good at it, you know. So the older you get, the less designy you get. Like, you don't have a blank page where you just start with your imagination. How do you like what's been the moment where you realized I should keep doing this, that this is really good what I'm doing?
Yeah, because I was almost a bit of a kind of a design nerd, because most of my friends looked at me and said, okay, I mean, you are really crazy. You spend all your time at school. I was not very good at school, but I really just passed my school education, my exams to get into my job as a designer. So all my school books are full of sketches and drawings, and everyone made a bit fun of me. I was a bit the nerdy guy who lived for his design passion. For me, this was also a bit of a proof point to say, okay, even if no one around me can relate to this, I still believe in myself and I want to live that passion of creating and designing things.
Super, super interesting. Do you, like, now you design watches for 12 years. You do design stories as well, as I would call it. But in your free time, when you're like, it's Sunday afternoon, do you still design other stuff? Because you miss, like, planes or...
Funny enough, I don't. I don't find the time to design other things. But one of the projects, which is still a kind of dream project for me, is to design a boat. We both have this story with sailing and the shooting we did back then. But we also started now working with a partner of IWC, the Italian yacht manufacturer Solaris, to create a boat, what we did last year. And this was a dream project for me to customize a yacht. But I mean, the ultimate would still be to fully design a yacht. I think that's still on my list to come, maybe if I find the time.
Okay. So I have a couple of questions that I wrote down, because I want to learn about design. I want to learn about, because me personally, like, we worked together in 2009. We can tell that story. So you approached my agent back in there, and we're looking for a person that takes pictures. And that was special as well, that not an ad agency, but the brand itself kind of reached out. And I was very young back in there. Like, I was way too young to ask.
We both were very young.
Oh, we were? Okay. Yeah. But but you were pretty clear in what you did. I was not very clear until today. It's been by far the most decided job that I've ever done. Like, you really had a vision that I did not understand ahead, but I tried to follow what your kind of thoughts in between are. And then at the end, we did this small book or whatever you call it, like a leaflet at SCHH. And for the first time, I understood what you were talking about. You know, like, the whole day of a Portugueser that starts in the morning and ends in the evening, and within there's different design approaches around that boat, around those sport kind of things. That was very, very impressive to me. But still, it's a very, very unusual way to work at the end. And so I kind of want to find out what, like, the whole design kind of, what makes a product an icon, for example. Like, you said IWC is a very icon-esque brand. Why? What makes that?
No, we have a lot of products that are around for many decades, for many years. Part of these products have been designed before my time with the brand. And these are iconic products that are precious to IWC Schaffhausen. And these are also products like, for example, the Portugueser design or the Palas design, that are even icons in the watch industry and are regarded as designs that really stand out in the market and form the character and the face of the IWC Schaffhausen brand. And for us as designers, this is something very, very precious, and at the same time very challenging to deal with that, because as a designer you want to do new things and you still have to respect what you find there as brand assets. And so to find a combination between what makes the aesthetic codes of these icons and still introduce some new ideas. The shooting we did back then was a kind of reinvention of the Portugueser. I mean, the Portugueser collection before I joined was associated to the history and was what was associated to Portugal and to Vasco da Gama and a lot of very historic stories. And we wanted to bring a kind of fresh, contemporary, luxury flavor to that. And we were shooting on a luxury sailing yacht of modern design, and also presented the Portuguese watches not as a classic and traditional watch, but as a modern classic with design lines that have an incredible modernity, despite the fact that this collection is 80 years old. And this is what I find fascinating with working for IWC, that we have these icons, and these icons have so strong codes that they can survive the time, but also that we have the ability to reinvent them every now and then with a new campaign and a new collection.
But what's the process at IWC itself? How do you start designing? Is it more remixing? So you take the base and try to do a 2021 version of it. What are you designing right now? Are we allowed to talk about this? Like, what's the next big project?
We are not, but as you know, we only have six collections, and we move within these six collections and relaunch one of them every now and then. So we're launching pilots this year, and so that's all the other five we are working on for the coming years, basically. Okay. But the process as such is that we really want to understand the essence of the product and the design codes. These are codes of the product that we have inherited, that we have also extracted, and that form actually the guiding principle for that design. But we also combine that with some new and fresh ideas. So this really makes every new collection that we respect the codes of the brand and the product line, but still surprise our customers with a component that is unexpected, be it a new functionality or complication, be it a new material or a new color code, and something that adds to that collection and also gives a very new perspective on a collection that is already 80 years old.
How big is the team? Like, do you bring, and how different, like is it the same? First, how big is it? How many people are on a design team?
We are 15 designers at the moment, half of them working on the watches, the other half on the other aspects of the brand expression. But sometimes also when it comes to a new collection like this, we also do workshops all together. And the beauty of that is that it's in a very international design team of different experience levels and also very different design backgrounds. I mean, a couple of people come from the luxury industry, others like me come from a classic industrial design background. There's architects, there's interior architects, there's people really coming from graphics or topography. Others come from film and animation. We have a guy coming from the film and animation industry, and they bring a very different, bring in different views also to such a collection in the collection campaign. And this makes the unique formula we have with an in-house design team in Schaffhausen.
Okay. Who do you design for? Do you think about the target audience when you're designing, or is it first for yourself? Or what's the quality measurement?
In fact, we sometimes work with personas to imagine, okay, this could be the person to wear this and that watch. So that's a quite known principle to have personas and to develop around personas. But in the end, what we often find is that we have to create a personal link with this product. Otherwise, you take yourself back too much as a designer. It there should be still your own passion and your own design language in the product to make a difference in the end, and to not act as a kind of to take a not too remote position from the product. So it's always a bit about yourself as a designer, and designers are very proud and very sensitive people, and sometimes also people that are very difficult to deal with. But if you lose that and you stand back too far and say, okay, that's my job to design for this persona and that's what I deliver, then you're missing that passion, that really this personal involvement, which really makes an outstanding product in the end. And therefore, everyone we have on the team has to love what they're doing. Not probably every edition, not every detail, but you have this personal link with the product and the brand, or you can't be a good designer working with us.
Between you and me, it's secret. It's a private conversation. How good does Chris taste? Like, do you design? Like, what's his feedback? Is it?
No, are you designing for him? Chris obviously has a design background and also has often very specific feedback. I mean, he's not someone saying, okay, I like it or I don't like it. But the good thing is working with someone like Chris that he comes back and says, okay, maybe there's something here in the color code or in the proportion that is not working. Can we look into a couple of options? So he is very specific about the feedback, and this makes it a very pleasant exchange and a straightforward way of improvement also working with the designers.
Okay. Coming out of, like, did you see my, some call it fashion brand, I say textile stuff, Paris, my initials, I don't know if you saw.
Sure, I saw it, yeah.
So it's a very different style. It's streetwear out of LA, very loud, yeah, very colorful. But I sometimes try to follow some sort of, like, I do follow LA trends, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, I go to LA, to downtown LA. I have a couple of stores I go to, which I know they have a great selection of brands. So I see, okay, what's happening right now in LA? And I kind of try to influence that, if I like it, into my design process of my clothing that I'm selling in Germany, like 3 to 5 months later. Mm-hmm. Question number one, how long is the time frame? And second, is there something like trends in the watch industry? Do you see something like, stuff is more bling bling, or do you follow that? Is that influencing your design process at IWC?
There is definitely trends in the watch industry. I mean, this is, you can clearly observe there was a vintage trend for many, many years of all the vintage watches popping up. And there was a trend for smaller watches. There was a trend for blue dials, for green dials. But in the end, this doesn't help us to work along these trends, because we often have very long lead times when it comes to developing new products. I mean, a normal watch, when the movement is ready, takes around about 2 years from the first sketch to market launch, and movement development takes even longer. So if I want to follow the trend of a small movement, so I should have started 5 years ago, or I will be 5 years too late. So in that sense, I can't go with trends in this business and this type of product, because I need a long-term vision. Sometimes also there is color aspects that come in special editions that is a shorter lead time and that we can do. But in general, I'm not so much influenced by trends in the watch industry.
Okay, so you did send me a Big Pilot, which was not exactly my kind of watch before, but I'm trying to, I'm starting to love it the more I wear it. What's happening to that kind of design within the next 2 years? Like, what's happening to Big Pilot design-wise? Are you going to change that?
The Big Pilot design is a very interesting one, because the Big Pilot started as a military watch, a watch that was built to technical specifications. So there was not a designer involved as such. So everything on the original military watches follows the principle form follows function. So you can look at the case, you can look at the oversized crown to be operated with gloves, the very readable dial, the oversized strap to be worn over the flight jacket. So every detail had a reason. And we moved this design, and this was not us, but also the former IWC director, Günther Blümlein, into the luxury context. And suddenly we get into a situation where form equals function, because we don't want a pure functional product, but we also want to have a beautiful product. And so this product has changed, and we even got the Big Pilot into something where we say, okay, this design is in the watch industry since 20 years, and there were so many editions, there were so many variants developed in crazy colors with crazy complications. It is almost like a cultural icon. So something which only which happens only to very few products and very few brands that they reach this level of becoming a cultural icon, where the product becomes a kind of projection surface for a community of collectors and aviation watch lovers to express their own aesthetic understandings in special editions with straps they add into that with watches they ask us to create, and we have to let go a little bit, but this happens without disturbing the strong aesthetic codes of the original product. And this shows how powerful this icon is and that level this product has reached now.
Is Big Pilot the most popular watch of IWC regarding sales numbers as well?
It is not, but it's probably one of the most recognized ones. It's a watch that is very much associated with the IWC Schaffhausen brand, and also is a perfect representation of our brand values when it comes to engineering and technical aesthetics and also pure design. So it's a perfect product really to transport that.
Okay. I want to talk about materials a little bit, because you kind of touched it 10 minutes ago, because that's probably one of the biggest parts of designing as well, the stuff you use to create watches, right? Not only color coding, also the materials itself, right?
The materials is very important, because they give a special character to the product, and we as IWC we have a strong legacy as a material innovator, which really goes back to the 80s. We were pioneers in introducing ceramic watches, titanium watches, and this has already given a certain direction to our innovation activities and developments.
And do you develop those materials? Like, where do you get inspiration for materials?
We have a specialist team. So we have an in-house materials expert, a PhD, a really scientific guy who explores new materials, also partly together with external developers, partly also with universities or university spin-offs. And so he is sourcing new materials and also bringing forward material developments. And for the selection of these, we as designers get involved. But we have a strong vision in IWC about material developments, that we don't believe in kind of random new materials. This is what is very, very common in the watch industry, that there's a kind of competition who introduces the most rare and the most exotic materials. That's not our business as IWC. We want to have materials that bring a technical added value to the product, but also deliver a visual added value to the design. And based on our history, we, for example, have a strong focus on titanium alloys and ceramics, which is really a kind of competence field of IWC, where we not only take the history where we had this pioneering situation in the 80s, but we have consequently further developed that with different alloys, with different variants and applications we introduced over the last decades. And one of the most recent materials, the Ceratanium, combines the titanium and ceramics in one material that uses the characteristics of titanium and ceramics.
I love that look of that material. Who came up with that? Like, you have one guy who created that, right?
Yes, exactly. We have one in-house specialist who finds out all these materials, which are sometimes from external sources. We don't have a kind of foundry ourselves in IWC, where we mix alloys and cast things. But this is really, really specialist developments. Also, partly materials that come from very different product fields, that comes from motorsports or from aviation or from space industry or from medical products. So all kinds of product categories where you develop high performance materials that have specific characteristics, be it strength, be it hardness, be it weight, that are interesting for watches. We are scanning these systematically, and every now and then find something that is unique and where we can get also an exclusivity as RWC.
And what's first, design or material?
I would say definitely material, because the material is an enormous source of inspiration also for us, because you can't design a material as such, but we as designers take inspiration from the characteristics of a material. Because take the example of the beige ceramics we have on the Mojave Desert editions. That's more than just a beige color. It's more than just a khaki color that is in that. But it's a specific characteristics that inspires developing a very technical product and other materials and other color schemes to go along with that and to complement this specific material.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about wearability and ergonomics of a watch. What would you say on a design level, what kind of watch should you wear out of a design perspective, and what kind of watch should you wear out of a wearability perspective?
I think that wearability is key, and this links maybe to your question earlier. We looked into the Big Pilot, and we're now launching a new version, which is 43 millimeters, and addressing exactly that aspect of accessibility, also for people loving the Big Pilot design, loving that iconic design, but now finding a wearable option. And a wearable option, which is not just a kind of sized down version of the actual Big Pilot, but it's a complementary product with a new interpretation on the aesthetic codes of the Big Pilot. A new dial design, taking inspiration from the historic one with a pure three-hands dial, a beautiful proportioned case with an increased water resistance of 10 bars, with an in-house movement of the latest generation, the Caliber 82. And for the first time in history, a metal bracelet that comes as an option on the Big Pilot, something we were always missing on that iconic product. And with a quick exchange system and a full range of leather straps and rubber straps. So this is taking the Big Pilot to a completely new level. It's not just a sized down Big Pilot 46, but it's a truly new product, which is slotting in this collection in a very interesting way and closing a gap we had in that collection in terms of size and variability.
And how did you start that product? Like, who came up with, we should do this? Is it you listening to customers, or is it in-house somebody said we should go a little bit smaller? Sometimes it looks too big on smaller people. Or what's the reason why do you launch that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because sometimes also things come together. I mean, we're definitely listening to our customers, and we try to get better and better with that. And the feedback on the variability is something we hear since a couple of years, and we said, okay, we have to do something about that. The topic of the metal bracelet is something which was brought up years ago also in conversations with collectors. And also the question for pure three-hands dial, which we now introduce, is something also coming out of conversations I have with customers and collectors since many, many years. So that's not something like a briefing, say, okay, we did some research and then we now do a Big Pilot 43 and that's actually what we do. No, it's a combination of that. It's where we clearly find the need and the opportunity in the collection to introduce a smaller product. But then all the comments we have received over the past also come into play, where we say, okay, no, if we do that, then we also do the quick exchange system. Now, then we also finally do the metal bracelet. And then this also gives room for a complementary design, which is a pure three-hands dial layout.
Christian, I have a couple of personal questions. First of all, what's been your best design at IWC?
That's very, very tough to say, but linking this also to our fantastic photo shooting back then, definitely the Portuguese Yacht Club generation coming out in 2010 sticks to my mind as one of the first product I designed for the brand, and the product that was also completely new to that Portuguese collection and marked a very important step in terms of modernizing that collection. And we relaunched it last year with a couple of new and fresh ideas. So it became already a bit of an IWC classic within the last more than 10 years it's in the market.
Yeah, that's been a great photo shoot. I want to go back to that for a second, because it's been by far my best, I wouldn't call it work day, because one thing that follows me is luck. Like, do you remember we had to move the boat? There were a couple of things that were hard to kind of arrange. And so the boat had to be in the Mediterranean at Monaco, because you could not put it. We were thinking about putting it in front of Portugal because of wind, because you were very, very keen on, we need this boat to sail. We don't want this boat to cruise around and have like a nice day. We wanted to sail. We want the real sailing thing. And that kind of, like, honestly, still impresses me how much you guys went for authenticity. Like, the person we shot was, can you tell me a little bit more? I don't want to say wrong things. The person that was the testimonial, who that was?
Yeah, this was Patrice Casnel. So he was part of the Cousteau people. He was one of the captains of one of the Cousteau boats. He sailed with Jacques-Yves Cousteau, and he was the skipper and captain of the Alcyon, which was a very advanced sailing boat, also owned by the Cousteau Society in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, but that was interesting that you choose a person like that to...
Want to have a model. We want to have a real sailor, someone who has knows what he does. And he definitely also enjoyed that shooting. And that was a very, very authentic representation of this mature guy who has that experience and represents this confidence we also wanted to radiate with the Portuguese collection.
And we were looking for wind. I kind of joked around saying, like, yeah, I am very lucky. I'm really a lucky person. And that was the definition of luck. Like, day two, the first wind. And do you remember the captain of the boat, Moonbird, telling us, like, okay, this boat has probably never been sailed as much with this much wind. Like, it was legit wind.
Now we had perfect sailing conditions. I think this was absolutely perfect, in not too much, not too little, but really like fantastic cruise sailing under enormous condition, because you had a big boat, so you need a little bit of wind to move that. And I still recall that also you did your very best, also hanging from the boom, taking some pictures in exotic angles, and so you were really going for it. This was an amazing shooting. We flew out from Monaco with a helicopter to find the boat and to shoot the boat from the air, to have some aerial shots. So the conditions were unbelievable.
Totally, 100%. And after that, I don't know if I recall the story right, but it's now the time to talk about it. Like, I sometimes twitch my stories a little bit. Like, after that, we were still talking a lot. You were very involved in the post-production process, like the way you color grade the pictures and to create a whole imagery of different vibes of the Portuguese watches. So, and then there was the new, I think it was Portofino. And you kind of, I remember it, I recall it, that you said, like, okay, we have a shooting and a photo shoot in Portofino, and there may be some stars and we kind of want to go black and white. Maybe you're interested in it. And I recall it that I told you, like, okay, I'm going to pay you if I can do that. Like, that's going to be the biggest fun ever. And I do recall it that you then, after some calls back and forth, called me and said, like, well, Paul, I have bad news. Sorry, we went for another photographer, which is usual. You know, like, in my job, we always pitch for jobs and you sometimes win, you sometimes lose. But then I saw the pictures and the guy I lost to was Peter Lindbergh. And I was like, okay, I can, if you lose to Peter Lindbergh, that's totally, I can live with that. Do I recall the story right, or is it totally different? And
almost. No, but this is actually a good example about how we reinvent ourselves with every launch, with every collection, and so we go from the sailing to a very different story in Portofino, doing a kind of shooting which celebrates actually the glamorous days of Portofino in the 50s and 60s, where the international jet set used to come there, and we wanted to do a black and white shooting really to bring this into picture. And I mean, I really enjoyed working with you on the Portuguese stuff. So yeah, so I said, okay, maybe we can do this together. But on the way, I mean, you know, that's the reality. The list of talent, of international film talent, get longer and longer. And also, these guys have their own vision and idea about how such shooting should look like. So, and on the way, unfortunately, you got replaced by Peter, and we had a fantastic shooting with him as well. But still, you know, I'm a passionate sailor, so I will always recall our sailing shooting in Monaco as one of the best events. I mean, we really had a lot of fun these days.
Yeah, it was great. So I recorded a podcast with your boss, and I was amazed by the fact, like, that I lost your watch. You know that now. Like, you gave me a watch, and after 2014, the celebrations of the World Cup, there was a film premiere in Berlin, and it was a great night. And that was the last moment I recall having that watch on my wrist. And it follows my life for 4 years looking for that watch. So far, it didn't show up. Did you ever lose a watch? Because Chris told he lost a watch jumping on a trampoline in Germany we say Schnitzelgrube, whatever the American word, the English word for it is. Did you ever lose a watch?
Yeah, I mean, working in this industry for so many years, I mean, in the good old days, we were also transporting watches ourselves, so there's no security. You just would take them, and nowadays it gets a little bit more formal and orchestrated. But yeah, for sure, you now and then lose a watch, but luckily I've always found my watches back. I once had a situation that the former CEO of the Mercedes Formula One team handed me over his watch in Brackley, and I wanted to take it back to the service in Schaffhausen, and I was sure I gave it to someone, and a couple of weeks later everyone was looking for that watch and nobody knew where it was, and so we said, okay, maybe someone has lost it, and so I couldn't recall what exactly happened, but we got a new watch for this guy, and so almost forgot about it, and almost one year later I found back this watch in a dark corner of a bag, which was really wrapped in one of these black gloves in a black inner lining of that bag, like in a women's handbag where you have lots of secrets stored for years. And so I found back this watch, which was a Portuguese yacht club, by the way. This happens every now and then, but we were always very good in finding back these watches.
Please find my watch.
Sooner or later.
it really follows my life. I'm still waiting for that bag. I'm looking for that bag where mine is. It's impossible that. I moved a couple of times. That's the problem.
Yeah, this is. But exactly what you said. I mean, you can replace this watch, but it will never be yours, because this is a watch where you have your personal memories, and this makes the beauty of the products we do, and that. People really like their personal watches. And even if you buy the same model a couple of years later, it's not the watch that followed your life for the last couple of years. And we have a fantastic customer service, and these guys are capable of making your watch look like new if you give it into the service. But we always ask the people, do you want to have the case polished? Do you want all scratches removed? And there's many, many people who explicitly asked, no, please don't remove any scratches, because this is part of my personal watch. That's part of what I went through together with this watch, and I don't want to lose that memory.
Totally right. It's very interesting. I'm a little nervous over here because I'm not sure how much you know about my storytelling of IWC Big Pilot that I'm working on right now. I'm most nervous. I hope you will like what I'm trying to tell over here.
Okay.
But storytelling is something I thought about like a lot the last 5 weeks because of all this project I did for you guys. I thought about what where I am right now at the age of 40. One of the things I found out about that is probably, I don't know if you call it achievement or one of the things I'm most happy about right now at this moment is that I'm truly free in deciding what to do with my time because I'm only telling my own story, you know? Mm-hmm. I was 10 years telling somebody else's story, if it's hip-hop, music, or brands, or soccer teams, or Formula One teams, or Formula One drivers, or whatever it was I worked for. And I kind of switched in the last 1.5 years towards my own story. So I'm interested in finding out, and that's our reoccurring question as well, for what would you have more time? Like, what would you like to have more time for in your time right now, like at your moment of time?
Yeah, I would definitely like to sail more. I'm a passionate sailor, as you know, but my family is not so much into sailing, so I would definitely like to spend more time sailing, also seeing good friends, and especially also in this current situation. And unfortunately, it's very difficult to find the time and to do that. But this is on top of my list.
It's very good down here in Newport Beach. You can come around. There's a big sailing community, and there's good wind.
Yeah.
I can invite you. Whenever you're around.
No, next time, definitely, I will pass by.
Yeah. Thank you, Christian, for this great talk. I learned a lot about watches, and I learned a lot about the design process of it. And what really impresses me is the stories you're creating around a design process. So it's not, before I thought, like, you're designing something, then you're showing it, and then that's it. The process is, like, way longer trying to tell that story, and you do a great job telling stories. And I'm deeply amazed by this.
Thank you very much. No, we try to do our best. It's not me alone. It's really a team of people that have a great passion for what they do. They really love the brand, and for me it's amazing to see how far the people are willing to go, and my job in the end is also just to orchestrate this a little bit and to channel this into a collection or into a story. Yeah.
Perfect. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Paul.
My dear listeners, thanks for your time. If you can't wait for the next episode, or maybe you want to know more about IWC, the unique watches, or the heritage of the brand, please check out the website of IWC or find IWC on social. Their handle is IWC Watches. Other than that, I'd love you to have you guys back for the next episode. If you don't want to miss it, subscribe to this podcast. Then you're never going to miss out on any upcoming episodes. See you later. Thanks for your time.